Jordan, I'm literally emailing you the link right now.
I can't wait. My Kelly world is opening.
Like a beautiful flower. Fragrant flower.
Like a beautiful flower.
Yes. Yes. I've been known to do exactly that. Open up like a beautiful flower.
You are all beautiful flowers.
Right.
What up, world?
Ayo.
Hello. Welcome. Episode 91 here of the Amera Podcast.
We're back.
Full house tonight. We have our guest, special guest, back in the house, Reverend Jordan Scruggs.
Yeah!
Woo! Welcome back.
It's funny every time you say that.
Hello, Jordan. How are you?
I'm great.
Jordan is never happier than when being praised.
That's right. When people tell me how excellent I am, like, why would I feel any other way?
It's hard not to feel that way when you're being praised and loved.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When I'm given my due accolades.
Oh no.
I mean, it's not like the little dictator gives you much, right?
So. No, she doesn't. No. She's a taker, not a giver.
Whoa.
And so that's our East Coast. On our West Coast, we got Tyler Grillo
in
the house.
Yeah. What's going on?
Hello.
In the pod house and the new house.
Right.
Beautiful thing.
Right.
That's right.
Vibes are good.
And joining me in Colorado, but in separate locations here, we got John Kelly. Hello. How are you?
Doing well. Glad to be back. Hello, listeners.
And John Anderson. Good day, sir.
Hey, everybody. How's it going? I'm currently looking up stats, which we'll get into, and it's fucking crazy. So I was a little distracted. Sorry. Glad
stats
to be here.
About what we're going to get into. Well, what are we getting into? We decided this is the day where we talk about not just capital punishment, but mass incarceration. That's right. We made it. Here we are.
I mean, I'm pretty sure we've talked about it before. I'm pretty sure
we've talked about it before. But the precipitating event for this is that William Barr, just in his infinite, you know, moral wisdom, decided to reopen capital punishment on the federal level. So we decided this would be a great time to talk about it. And we wanted Jordan on, and then she was like, only if we can also talk about mass incarceration. And then I realized once again why we are friends and close.
It's true. Not only are Jordan and John related, but...
They might be friends also.
They might also be friends. They're relatives that like each other, which is apparently a rare thing.
It's rare, I guess, but yeah. And so William Barr is going to begin the capital punishment executions, I think, in November is when they said they're going to start them up again.
So they're going to try to.
Trying to. That's what they've projected. But we haven't actually executed anybody since 2002. 2003?
I believe it was in the Bush administration, that's for sure.
Yeah, on the federal level. Yeah.
Yeah, on the federal level.
Yeah.
Right, because it is an important point to make that right now we're just referring to federal.
Yeah, Texas still
there's
killing
still
people.
States.
Right.
Still killing people.
Right.
Right. Yep. And so obviously there's federal law and state law. This, I think, though, is concerning because we have, examples of other leaders in other countries who have seized power and then locked up their rivals, and Trump's had autocratic tendencies. So, you know, it strikes concern, and it's all becoming quite relevant. So, John Anderson, you said you got some data and some facts.
Yeah, I got some facts.
You want to throw something crazy into the mix?
Here's something crazy. Since 1972, we had 200,000 people incarcerated in the United States in 1972. Today we have 2.2 million people. So that's an increase of what, 11 fold, if my math is correct, to do on the podcast, which is always dangerous. That's fucking, I've gotten it wrong before, Jordan. It was embarrassing.
But I thought math was the most important thing.
It is. Sometimes I just misspeak it. Hey-o! I love that so much. Can we just have a podcast?
Let's ask Andrew Yang.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Dude, yeah. I love Andrew Yang. Anyways, so this is bananas. We have 5% of the world's population, but 25% of its prisoners. We incarcerate more people on a per 100,000 person basis than anybody else. Next to us is El Salvador, Rwanda, Russia, and Brazil, which is not great company. That rounds out the top five.
Interesting. I didn't realize that was the top five.
Yeah. Also, something interesting, all men, 1 in 9 men will be imprisoned since 2001. That's your probability. 1 in 17 white men and 1 in 3 black men. 1 in 6 Latino men.
Yeah, the racial disparities are...
Yeah.
And you see a similar racial disparity for women, although there are significantly less women per 100,000 women incarcerated.
Right.
Yeah, so what that says to us is that there is a significant and disturbing trend towards locking up American citizens, and it has a distinct racial component, which is very disturbing based upon the particular history of this country.
Yeah. And, you know, nothing says freedom like prison, right, y'all? you know, yeah, I think that what also just like some things to throw in here, I don't know if we really want to dig into the details of this, but just some things, if folks aren't familiar with this, like the school to prison pipeline, if you've heard of this concept. So basically, like, not giving people, specifically black children, but also other children of color, like not having good access to education. So then, and being in poverty, which we can get in this whole thing, but poverty, crime, linked. So any motherfuckers like, but there's more crime. Yep, because poverty, that's a thing. So it's like, when, so school prison pipeline is like lack of education, poverty, resorting to other means to make ends meet, prison, and then those parents can't, so having kids in this mix, so the next generation, parents are in prison, can't provide for their children, and cycle repeats. Yeah. So, that's, something that, you know, we as Americans need to be really concerned about and figure out. And of course, there's no, it's no accident that this is this way. Obviously, there's all the history of racism and chattel slavery in this country, but also the war on drugs, right, is a more recent way in which this has really escalated.
I mean, I think they're essentially the same thing. Like, I think in a lot of ways, if you correlate the dates, the explosion in incarceration corresponds with Nixon's tough on crime / war on drugs, right? So
right, absolutely. I think 100%.
Well, in New York State, you know, we had the Rockefeller laws, and so there are people who are incarcerated for nonviolent drug offenses for just like a ridiculous amount of time, and almost all of them are black. And if you look at the racial disparities in terms of like crack cocaine usage versus like powder cocaine, chemically they do the exact same things to your bodies, but in terms of like, you know, what kinds of like dangerous behaviors you might engage in or something like that, but the mandatory minimum sentencing for something like crack cocaine was like 7 times longer. I would have to look up the exact data, but it disproportionately impacts people of color every single time, even if you're using the exact same drugs. So if you go into a prison in New York State, you always hear that that racial inequities are really a big problem in prisons. But I taught at a correctional facility in New York State, and then I've been a member of a program with a prison in Connecticut, and it is so stark. Like it's amazing. Like a lot of the prisons are in rural areas, so there's a bunch of industry in the rural areas, which are predominantly white, and so it really is an industrial complex in that, like, it's the only employment opportunity available. Yeah. Did you have something, John?
Yes. According to the ACLU, a comprehensive examination of the 100-to-1 crack versus powder cocaine sentencing disparity, under which distribution of just 5 grams of crack carries a minimum of 5 years, while distribution of 500 grams of powder cocaine carries the same 5-year mandatory minimum. Right. So it's 100-to-1.
Yeah. So it's insane.
It's 100-to-1.
It's insane. It's like, it's so crazy.
Sorry to interrupt, but I wanted to get that in there.
No, that's okay. Thanks for throwing that in there. And it to see, like, it really kind of feels like, you know, for every one corrections officer that you see that is a person of color, there are 30 white officers. And they're all in these rural communities where there's almost zero racial diversity. So the only interaction that mostly men, white men who are corrections officers in these facilities have with people of color are within the prison. And so there's not only is there just like gross racial inequity, but the way that the corrections officers treat the people in the prison is obscene. It's unbelievable. And I've seen it myself where I'm just like, I can't even believe this is happening.
Right. And to add on top, let's not forget that a lot of those facilities are privately run facilities. And so the incentive is to keep people in there and to cut costs at the same time. So not only are you cutting basic services for people that are held within the prison, but it's also smiled upon to treat these people even worse by the guardsmen.
Right. Well, we're lucky that in New York State that we don't have any private prisons, but they're all over the country. And in addition to something like privatization of prisons, there are actually, I wish I could think of the name of the one that I was reading about recently, but they're actually, you know, businesses that sell large amounts of, you know, like concessions items or whatever. They've got commissary, and they jack up the, and they do like things like CDs and stuff like that too, that folks who are incarcerated will purchase and they dominate the market. There's like only one market. And so they can charge whatever they want to. And it is a ridiculous amount of money.
Yeah. There was an issue in California with a phone company for families trying to, you know, call people who are incarcerated. Mm-hmm. And they same thing, it was a monopoly, so they could just jack up the price. And it was something like, you know, they were charging like at one point, God, I can't remember. I don't want to say names, but it was like super high, right? Like it was like looking at how much it costs to like talk to your family. It was like more than $1 a minute, right?
Yeah.
So it's just like absurd amounts. Yeah.
I think that this brings up a good point about mass incarceration generally, which is it's really fucking expensive. On top of everything else, it's incredibly expensive and it's incredibly economically inefficient. You have all of these people who could be productive members of society, or a vast majority of them anyways, with a rehabilitation system instead of an incarceration system.
Right.
But instead, we're paying their room and board as taxpayers, which I'm fucking tired of doing. And so, and those go to private prisons.
So, it gets doubly fucked up because we're paying for that as taxpayers. But then, so if anyone hasn't watched the movie 13th, you should watch the movie 13th. I'm pretty sure it's still on Netflix, but it talks about how when slavery was abolished, it basically just how it just, except for there's a clause in there, there cannot be slavery unless you're incarcerated.
Right.
And so it's basically just flipped. So not only are we as taxpayers paying for their room and board, but then those incarcerated people are being
essentially enslaved.
There's contracts between the prisons and private companies who then get their labor at extremely cheap prices. So, and on top of that, if we go back to execution, it costs even more
to
money
execute some,
to execute people than it does to keep them in prison for their entire lives.
Yeah, it's insane.
But that's because of, and I don't want to get too much into it, but it's because of the execution methods.
Of course.
Well, and because of the appeal process and the higher standard
it's just, it's almost like capitalism, the prison game, somehow it's doing more than just like taking advantage.
It's a money-making machine for certain members of society.
It's doing more than just making money. It's actually kind of taking advantage of tax dollars at the same time.
Absolutely.
You know, it's a form of capitalism that's seeped into the government.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of a Ponzi scheme, and also all of the incentives when you apply capitalism to incarceration are wrong. They're fucking wrong morally and economically, and we should stop it. Sorry to interrupt, Tyler.
No, I'm just gonna make a little jump here, which is that private prisons shouldn't be a thing. But honestly, prisons shouldn't be a thing, you know, because we have this mentality, and I'm guilty of this too. But we have this mentality in our society where it's like, someone did something wrong, fuck that person, punish them. And I'm guilty of that too. I'm like, fuck you, Trump. Like, you know, like, go to prison, you know.
Right.
Racist liar. Shit. But the thing is that there are other ways of dealing with, and other societies have other ways of dealing with when someone makes a mistake, right? What we're saying, and this comes from, we can look back at our puritanical roots. This is where this comes from, right? Is that, like, punishment should follow misdoings. But there's also something where you can be like, you can speak to, this is what healing is. You speak to someone as a human at the deeper soul level and you go, hey, you made a mistake, but I know you're better than that. And, you know, we work with them. Now, we are so far away from that as a society, but it's like, I always just got to put it out there because it's like, that's what, like, reconciliation is, and, like, healing is owning up to our mistakes as we do when they're not criminal, and then trying to move forward and atone for those things rather than punishing, right? I mean, yeah. We self-punish too, but there's other ways of dealing with it.
Absolutely. It really is the difference between a rehabilitation versus a punishment system. And interestingly enough, it's funny that you bring up the puritanical roots, right, of certain punishment styles in the United States. But throughout the colonies themselves, there was a lot of internal debate on how to punish people and whether or not rehabilitation versus punishment was the right way to go. So it is interesting that you see debates mm-hmm. about this even 270, 300 years ago about the right way to deal with people that are deemed inappropriate members of society, too violent for society, not following societal norms. So again, we're dealing with, you know, issues that people have debated for a long time, but I think if you look at the way that a lot of advanced countries deal with people who commit crimes, rehabilitation, trying to bring people back into society, giving them skills, giving them a way to get back into their communities is more healthy for everyone involved rather than just lock away, punish, and you're screwed for the rest of your life. We can go through a whole bunch of punishments that people get for being in the penal system in the United States, from not being able to vote, not being able to get good jobs once they come out, and it's disgusting the way that they're treated when they come out.
Yeah.
There's a couple of things that, just to piggyback off some things that have been said, first is that interestingly enough, the original penal system was, you know, you would go to the quote penitentiary, which is where you were supposed to be penitent. They were started by Quakers, and
right. The
goal of the Quakers was not this like endless cycle of punishment where, you know, even after you've paid your debt to society, you continue to be locked out of things like housing opportunities, educational opportunities, and work opportunities, but that you would go and have a quiet time where you thought about what you did. And then you would be like reintroduced to society. Obviously, it's not that way anymore. And that was one
system,
right? And that was the system I'm most familiar with because it was in the Northeast, and that's what we're dealing with now. But that's also the system that like gave rise to Rikers Island. So yeah. It's not like that worked out really well, right? but there's also the, you know, I know that we're like really quick to jump to the. Oh, it's so awful that, you know, like people are being enslaved, right, to provide this source of labor for different companies. And I definitely agree that it's wrong for us to take advantage of people who are in an incarcerated state and basically profit off of their labor. And at the same time, I also know that with some of the men that I've worked with, the most meaningful thing that they're allowed to do is work. And to be able to learn a different skill. And so it's not so much that I think we need to not have any kind of industry within prisons. It's that we need to rethink how we do that, because it is a means of offering them an opportunity to gain valuable skills.
Totally.
And so, there are guys that come out that have been in 20 years and like are great landscapers because they've had an opportunity to do some like horticultural stuff. A lot of machine welding and things like that. There's a couple of places where the state like pays to have their license plates made in facilities and things like that. So
you know what?
I would be go ahead.
In Colorado, they have a program where prisoners train dogs.
Which is an amazing idea.
Yeah, that's
an amazing idea.
Yeah,
amazing.
I mean, if you just pay them fair wages.
Yeah, that's I think where we're getting at is that we shouldn't be as a society incarcerating people and then profiting off of their labor. So
exactly.
Like if they had a job and then we put all that money in a bank account so it could accrue interest and then it could allow them to reenter society with some amount of like resources so mm-hmm. that they weren't so poor, which adds to that cycle of poverty that we are and incarceration right. that we were talking about earlier. And so that, I mean, that is a solution in which everybody wins. Right. And that's what we should be looking for. And it's a solution. It's not just like you're locked away, you're punished and that's it. It's OK, you're like a human being and we're going to try. You made a mistake and we're going to try and make you better because making you better will make society better. It will make everybody's lives better. And so we all win in this. But we all lose when those people don't have those good outcomes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Could I pivot us back to death penalty again, because
absolutely
I have more stats for you.
Wonderful, because it's a blessing to have the Reverend right. Scrubs on here for Reverend this conversation Scrubs. Because I want to
fabulous
you stop because I want to have I also want to have partly the moral conversation also around
indeed, oh let's do it about indeed. About
yeah
capital
about yeah. capital punishment. Because I understand, now I will just say some of my personal, I understand that if someone was to kill someone that I loved, I might want to kill them back. I could see that being something that I would want to do as a reaction to that. And I actually do think that, I don't know about death, but I do think that sometimes people need to get their ass kicked. I think there's a place for violence
in the balance
certain,
of life.
There are certain times where it's like, oh, you really think you're...
Nazis.
Oh, you think you're that good.
Nazis.
Well, when I punch you in the face, you're going to realize you still are just a human. But...
No, I mean, punch and
Tyler's defense, though, is Nazis. Absolutely so, right. Sometimes, I've witnessed it a lot, being a gigging musician. I've seen so many bar fights break out. And literally, as soon as somebody gets hit in the face... Like, they snap to it, and they're like, oh, this actually hurts.
Oops. Yeah, right. There are repercussions. Now, but the thing is, as a society, I think that it is our collectively, we should be lifting each other up and moving in a direction that is more morally whole, whatever that means. That's something we don't have to get in the difference. But I think that we can agree that killing is less morally whole than not killing. And so the question is, this is you know, the debate that goes on the moral side of capital punishment is like, well, is there a place, like, wouldn't you want revenge? And it's like, but that's the thing, is like, maybe it's not about what I would want in that situation, what anyone would want, but rather what we're trying to move towards as a society
right.
and hold each other collectively accountable for.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Go ahead, Jordan.
Blake. No, Blake. That's all you.
No, please.
No, you got it.
Please.
Y'all need to.
This is great content.
I'm just thinking about, you know, what you said, Tyler. And truthfully, this is something that I think that we all, as ethical human beings, moral human beings, if that's what we're striving for, have to really wrestle with. You know, there was a time in my life that I was like a very ardent pacifist, like extremely ardent pacifist, and not in like a passive pacifist sense, like a nonviolent resistance kind of thing. And I still believe very strongly in that. And I also don't know what to say to someone, you know, when I think about like in terms of interpersonal conflict, I think it's really, really important for us to avoid physical abuse, right? I think that's really, really important to me. It's something I value a lot. And then in terms of like overall sort of like structural and systemic violence, I mean, like what is the ethical option if you know that someone else, I'm thinking about like, okay, let's have a hypothetical scenario, right? Like you're president of the United States and you know that there's a let's say a plane, right, that's carrying a bomb and it's being driven or flown, I guess is the right way to say that. Yeah. Driven through the sky. the planes.
They're cycling through the sky.
And there's somebody on the ground, you know, that's like maneuvering it, right? And you know that, like, if that plane reaches its destination, hundreds of people are going to die, right? And is it more ethically, you either shoot the plane down and bomb the shit out of, you know, whoever it is that is flying the plane, in order to save lives, or you don't, because you say, like, I'm an absolute pacifist and I would never harm anyone. And that in of itself is a form of violence. So we have this like idea of like violence versus nonviolence that is, I think, privileged in some ways, because it allows us to keep our hands from getting dirty when the world is a messy place. And at the same time, I'm also just like, how do we violence, in my opinion, violence begets more violence. And so how do we do the least violent thing in order to be the most ethical?
I think
interesting.
Violence must be used with an extremely narrow purpose. I'm trying to like come up with a criteria for the use on the top of my head, but I think it should be used go ahead, Blake.
Why don't you go read your friend Niebuhr?
Well, you know, I'm only like 70 pages into it, and I read a sports book instead because it was hard. So I'm getting back into it. So I'm there.
Come on, John.
I think of what I was going to say was that I think of the book Rules for Radicals, you know, in the part where he's talking about the moral high ground, and it shifts depending on the situation and the time and place. I think that the way that I see it is that if it's, and I trust my moral compass, right? That's, I guess, the first place is you have to first know yourself, and then you can make the most solid answer. So for me, there's definitely a time and a place for violence, such as self-defense, you know. Yeah. That's how I see it. It's not really a this or that conversation, because it's always changing depending on the situation. Yeah.
So to bring this back to capital punishment, I look at capital punishment and I say, kind of to piggyback on what we were talking about, is like violence with a purpose. If capital punishment deterred violence, I would be much more likely to support it, and it would be a much less clear decision for me. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't. It doesn't.
Yeah.
It does not deter any criminal. And so therefore there's no purpose to it other than like, you know, revenge, which is not a societal goal. And so then you can't be a society that tells somebody that murder is wrong by murdering them. Like, it doesn't logically make sense to me once we've gotten the moral side out of it. It's just like, the goal of society is there's no murder. And so as a society, we shouldn't murder people unless it's going to stop murderers, which it doesn't.
Yeah.
So it doesn't, it makes no sense.
But see, this is where I'm going to disagree just a little bit, because I think in some instances it might, if the person is clearly unrepentant, can't be brought back into society, will murder people again if they're ever let out, or if they ever break out of prison. That is a moral gray ground where it's like, well, they probably will always do more harm than good, no matter what.
But then we throw them in jail, but we don't murder them, right? Like, I disagree. I think we implicitly had a conversation earlier that was basically like, abolish all prisons for all things. And I don't think that was explicitly the conversation we were having, and I just want to make that explicit point that, like,
I wouldn't agree that that's the conversation.
You know, like, if you're going to be a super murderer, I'm fine with
jail. Yeah.
But, like,
jails exist. That's why it should exist.
But for the vast majority of criminals, we can rehabilitate them, including maybe some murderers, right?
Definitely.
It's just it's just the super duper murderers, sociopaths, whatever. But, yeah.
I think about this a lot too, because I've worked with probably like close to 200 guys at this point that are incarcerated, and They're in a medium security prison, but many of them have been incarcerated for a very long time, and most of them have killed people. And the idea that somebody who has taken another human life can't be rehabilitated is ludicrous to me. And part of that is because most of these guys did it when they were incredibly young. And, you know, I had this, like, I will like never forget this conversation. It was like the most, it taught me more about what it means to be incarcerated. And because if you've killed someone, than just about anything else, where we had this presentation we were giving, and I had this guy named Yvonne that I had like mentored through this program, and he's 22 and he came here as a young immigrant. He was, I guess he was 18 or 19. They come to the United States and couldn't get any work. And so he had decided that he was going to join a gang. And again, he's like, you know, he's like 19 years old at the time, and has, in order for him to be initiated into this gang, he has to like rob a store. So he like goes into this laundromat to rob the laundromat. He's got a gun. He doesn't really know how to use it. And the guy that owns the laundromat shows up, and he freaks out and he shoots him and he kills him. It wasn't premeditated. And he did something wrong, you know, but like, it wasn't like he wanted to kill someone. And once he was incarcerated, we had this class together, and he did this, this theatrical adaptation of a scene from Dante's Inferno. And so we like wrote it together, and then he was going to perform it in front of his classmates. And that's what all the guys in this class had to do. And so we're like getting ready to give the presentation, you know, and he is sweating so much and is like so nervous. And I was like, dude, like, I hate to be crass, but like, you've killed someone. Like, this is like really like low stress. Like, and what he said in response was just, he said, you know, Jordan, like, I would completely disagree with that. And he said, you know, when you kill someone, you don't have to look them in the eye. You don't have to show them your intellect. You don't have to let them know what you've been thinking, mm-hmm. and you don't have to expose yourself. You hide behind a gun. And this is way more terrifying than killing someone to me. Mm. And I was just like, wow, like, I've just like never thought about that. And I've shared that with the guys. That was the first time I ever worked in a prison. And I've shared that with the guys that I've had in every single class since then. And that's, and all of them like universally are like, well, yeah, like, you're stupid. Like, why wouldn't you know that? but I think it's just really amazing to see like the transformation that happens, and the lack of confidence, the lack of resources. I mean, there are exceptions to every rule, right? But the majority of the people that I have encountered, I'm like, yeah, like, I'd like for you to be my neighbor. And then there are some people occasionally who I've met, I would say one out of every probably 30 guys that I've worked with, where I'm like, there needs to be a place for you to go and stay there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, right. Like, right. I don't trust you. I don't want you to know where I'm from. I don't want you to know the names of my family members, you know, like, yep. You're in here for a reason.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And even,
and it's because you're not a good human being.
Yeah. I do agree. There's probably some people who in this lifetime are beyond repair. But I think that, you know, I think that's a really amazing story, Jordan. And like, the it's almost like what I heard in that story was like the hiding behind the gun, right? It's like we hide our, and I mean, we as a society, a lot of the time, we hide, all of us individually, we hide our true selves, which is so vulnerable to put forward behind violence. Mm. Right?
Absolutely.
Like, it's a lot hard, it's a lot mm-hmm. easy, like, even just linguistically, like, you know, when people are just like throwing out like really violent racist speech, if you really sit down with those people and you start to be like, what's up with that, you know, you, and you dig in, it's usually something's fucked up in their lives and they're really scared mm-hmm. to talk about that. And so they're screaming yeah. about something else. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, absolutely.
And so I think that, you know, in the prison industry, you know, like, what we're missing here is like, if you're going to capital punishment, it's like, we need to learn what's going on. Why are, not only why are these things happening, but even in really violent situations, like, well, what trauma happened to you? Even the people, so I'm talking about the people who were like, they're inhibited, you know, we can't rehabilitate them. Now, I agree, there's probably a small minority of people where that's true. But often it's just like, I think we just don't understand how to heal. And we don't know how to heal each other. We don't know how to heal ourselves. And yeah. so unless we understand
And it's easier to ignore it in a lot of places. And that's why we have the punishment system.
Yes.
It's mm-hmm. easier to ignore the difficult looking in the mirror aspect of dealing with other people's trauma that any person has to do when they help other people or try to help someone
when
through.
Someone does something terrible and they're just like, you know what? I'm not that person. That's not, they're an outlier. Just kill them. Just kill them because like they have nothing to do with our society and like kill it rather than, you know, we grew up in the same society. What are the things that are true in me that are also true? Like, what do we actually share? And where do we deviate? And how do we deviate? Why do we deviate? What happened there? Right? But instead of that, no, lock them up or kill them or put them away. Yeah.
Well, and also, I mean, if you think about the racial disparities in these situations, it's not only is it what do we share in common and how could I also be that person in a different situation, but am I in some way responsible? You know, whether it's, you know, historically, or like, I think, so let me back up a little bit. I hate it when people are like, oh, I had nothing to do with racism or I had nothing to do with slavery or whatever. Blah, blah, blah. I think there's a difference between
white
being
privilege.
Guilty.
Talk about it. Yeah.
I think there's
I
a
had
difference
nothing to
between...
do with it. It makes no difference. I think my actions count.
There's a difference between being guilty of something and responsible for fixing it.
Yeah.
And
100%.
So while we individually may not have been guilty of enslaving someone, we have benefited from a system that was predicated on slavery in a way that makes us responsible for fixing it. And it's much, much easier for us to say those people, whether they're, you know, whatever their color, the color of their skin, who's incarcerated, are nothing like us. And we had nothing to do with creating the reality that they lived in. Because it also means, not only examining who we are as moral and ethical individuals, but also how our society is fundamentally unjust.
Yes.
Great point.
Yeah.
Well said.
I don't know. Maybe more to be said. I don't know. I think we just, solved.
Yeah, I think we need to wrap it up. Although I would love to continue this conversation. I just want to quote System of a Down. Minor drug offenders, fill your prisons, you don't even flinch. All our taxes paying for your wars against the new non-rich. And I also would like to leave with a question for everybody. So instead of imprisoning, because we're going to try to not imprison people unless they really need to be imprisoned, which we're not sure where Donald Trump lies at the moment, but what should his rehabilitative duty be instead, or maybe while he is imprisoned?
He has to clean up all of the human excrement in the... in this concentration camps for immigrants and asylum seekers.
Ooh, that's what
like it.
Yeah, because he's a germaphobe.
Exactly, John. Exactly.
Yeah, boy, that's what I'm talking about. I also think he should be like maybe dipped into a vat of feces while being forced to
Jordan's face. I feel you. Well, I'm with you on that one, Jordan.
Wait. While being forced to make human connections.
Wow.
Okay. I liked Tyler's. I was gonna say, but since we're still good people, we'll at least give him gloves and like goggles, so he's still safe while he's working in the kitchen.
See, there you go.
Maybe a snorkel.
Maybe a snorkel.
No hard snorkel.
Oh my god. Well, on that note, on that image.
Well, hold on. I haven't shared mine yet.
Oh my god.
That's true.
Oh, I can't wait.
I don't think Kelly has
better
either.
And better.
Poor Jordan.
Oh, I don't think I can top that. The snorkel, especially.
I mean, I don't know.
No. Here's mine. and he has to sit in a room all for 8 hours a day, and people have to come in, and he has to say something nice about them for a minute at a time for each person that walks in. Not allowed to say anything mean, or else he gets zapped.
Can we make it exclusively people of color?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I would like to do? And something that would make me incredibly happy is if all of his assets were taken and divided up and used for reparations.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
And then after that, we dip him in the shit snorkel.
Yeah.
Just like rub salt in that wound, baby.
I like it. Take all the stuff back in New York and give it back to African American families that he pushed out while he was trying to make new living spaces.
And then I would have him, after he showers up, I'd have him go be a scribe for Oprah Winfrey.
Oh,
nice.
Pretty good, too. Yeah.
It's pretty good, but
these are good.
Yeah.
These are all solid.
Yeah.
Awesome. We have generated more merch ideas in this 5 minutes than we have in a hot minute.
On that note, I'm
so in awe of us.
Same. We're amazing.
It was a pleasure having all of you on tonight. Jordan, thanks again.
Yeah, no, this is, you know, I always love hanging out with you guys.
Appreciate it always. The Reverend.
Thank you, Reverend.
Listeners, follow us. Leave us comments. We'll listen. We'll talk about stuff you want us to talk about. We'll bring Jordan back to talk about other theological conversations if you want. Let us know.
Sure.
Math is the best language. Godspeed, everybody.
Oh, you're just going to drop the mic like that. Oh, you're just going to drop the mic. Shot.
I couldn't help it. I'm sorry.
Unbelievable.
I'll give it to you.